Hand punched up the computer guidance system and let the vehicle go on its automated course. The floating cars rushed through the half-open metal gate just as the door to the muster room melted open, spilling a wedge of light into the tunnel. From behind, they heard shouts, other people climbing into waiting mine cars. Han leaned over the controls, but the repulsor lifts could go only so fast. The sound of another mine car came roaring up behind them. Han had three cars linked together, hauling three riders with only one engine. If Skinksnecks and the others took one car each, they would travel faster. Han looked behind them with his infrared goggles and saw the glowing target of Skinksnecks and two other piloted vehicles. In the cold darkness, his own body heat would be just as apparent to the pursuers. Chewbacca held on to Kip, pushing him down to safety in the second car. The Wookiee reached behind him, fumbling with the catch to the empty third car. Skinksnecks and the two guards closed the gap. And Chewbacca decoupled the magnetic bearing from the third car. Suddenly released, the empty car slung out behind them, dropping toward the ground. Skinksnecks cried out as he swerved up to avoid a collision. The other two guards both curved to the left, battering into each other, but somehow all three pursuers kept their balance. They roared after Han.
Nice try, Chewie.
Skinksnecks pulled out his modified double blaster, powered it on, and fired. The phased double beam poured out, striking the ceiling of the tunnel ahead of Han. The explosion of heat and light blinded him through the infrared goggles. Somehow, Kip reacted with molten speed and yanked the floating car sideways. Ahead in the inky blackness, a sudden clump of pearlescent glitters sprang out of a bare rock wall, wavering in the air. Then the luminescence started traveling down the tunnel away from them, as if trying to outrun the approaching cars.
"Another bogey!"
Kip shouted. Their floating cars followed the bogey, closing the gap, but as they neared, the glowing thing accelerated, as if taunting them by whipping around curves just in front of them.
"Uh-oh. I think I just figured out what course we're on. All this feels very familiar."
"What? How can you tell?"
"The most recent set of destination coordinates in this navigation computer was programmed by Boss Roke. We're going back down to where that monster was."
In a long straight stretch of tunnel, Skinksnecks fired his double blaster again. As if he could sense the blast coming, Kip rocked the car to one side as the intense pulsed bolt shot down the tube, passed through the bogey without harming it, and struck a distant wall. The impact blew open a huge aperture into another grotto. Seeing an escape, the bogey ducked through the new opening.
"Put it on manual. Let me fly it," Kip said.
By now their eyes had grown accustomed to the bogey's glow and they could actually see where they were going. Han relinquished the controls. Without a moment's pause, Kip launched the car into the wide open section of wall that led to an unknown maze. As they plunged into the new grotto, something long and fibrous stung Han's face like a sharp wire whipping past him. The bogey shot into the vast chamber, flying across the darkness to the far wall. Upon striking the rock face, though, it did not melt through and vanish as the first bogey had done days earlier. Instead, the glowing ball stuck on the rough rock surface. It glittered and spangled and pulsed as if struggling. Around the bogey in the glow, wide veins of spice fizzled blue as the illumination activated them. The light crackled and spread outward in a network along the wall. All of the spice in the chamber began to race around in long lines as the light increased in a chain reaction. The pattern looked familiar.
"Like a web,"
Han said. From behind them, Skinksnecks fired again in a long, continuous blast that missed them in the wide space. The powerful beam struck the ceiling of the chamber, making it erupt with hot, broken stone that poured down from the roof of the tunnel. The bogey stretched and struggled as parts of the spice web tore away in the avalanche, yanking portions of the glow with it. Then Han saw the monstrous creature rise up from its lair on the grotto floor. A huge spider made of blown glass, all sharp edges, with 100 legs and 1,000 eyes. The bristling legs moved in a blur as it clambered up the debris toward the glowing bogey struggling in the spice web. On the rocks below, tossed aside like wadded sheets of used paper, lay the crumpled forms of Boss Roke, Clore, and the guard, frozen solid and drained of every drop of their bodily energy. Skinksnecks and the pursuing guard roared into the grotto. The spider thing glowed a dull blue with electric arcs crawling up and down its needle-like limbs, as if the creature itself was made out of activated spice. Attracted to the approaching heat source, it reared up. Skinksnecks did not see it until he had driven his floating mine car nearly into the grappling hook claws. Skinksnecks tried to leap out of the doomed car, but the spider thing speared him with a sharp leg, raising his scarecrow body higher. With the last of his strength, Skinksnecks flailed his arms as his body grew cold. The multi-legged creature began to feed. Han saw an open passage in the ceiling and noticed a dim trickle of light coming from it.
Up there!
Kip plunged the car upward into the ceiling opening and suddenly came upon another network of tunnels. They raced upward. The distant daylight pierced through the jagged obstacles of the passage. The floating car burst into the thin, open air of Kessel, where watery light blinded them like a supernova. Struggling to see, Han yanked off his goggles and took back the pilot controls. Off to their right, they saw the towering stack of an atmosphere factory gushing white steam and air vapor into the sky.
That way,
Kip said.
We'll be able to find a ship.
Good idea,
Han said. When Luke returned to Coruscant, he had a joyous reunion with Han and Leia's children, whom he had not seen for some time. But Leia herself looked very tired. It wasn't just the strain of combining diplomatic duties with being a mother. Something else deeply concerned her, but she hadn't said anything. Rather than pry, Luke tried to get Leia's mind off her troubles. Leia, I need your help in a couple of bureaucratic matters.
Sure, she smiled wryly at him. What can I do?
I still need to contact Mara Jade and a handful of other possible candidates, but now that I have two trainees here and waiting, I've got to find a place where we can begin our Jedi studies, and I have to find it soon. I've spoken with Streen and Ganturis, and it's clear to me that Coruscant is not appropriate. Streen doesn't like to be around people. He's not going to be very comfortable anywhere in Imperial City. And there is some danger about what we might do. Who am I to be teaching all these Jedi potentials? I have no way of knowing what might trigger a disaster, like one of the Emperor's force storms. It would be better if we found someplace isolated.
Yes, I agree. I'll try to find you an appropriate place.
And while you're looking, Luke continued, we also need to relocate all of the people on Il Shah. There's only about 50 of them left on that outpost, but the planet is doomed. When I took Ganturis, I promised we would find a new home for the survivors. See what you can do.
For a group of people that small, shouldn't be difficult, Leia answered.
Any place sounds better than the planet they're leaving.
Luke laughed. Or you could always have Han win another planet for them in a card game.
She looked at him as if stung. He suddenly realized that it was Han she was worried about.
Just then Lando Calrissian burst into the room unannounced.
Leia, I just heard that Han hasn't come back yet.
Both men looked at her. Leia sighed and sat down.
Yes, Han is missing. He went off to Kessel about 2 weeks ago, but now he's 4 days late coming back. Yesterday I spoke to someone who seems to be in charge on Kessel, a Rybet named Morath Duel. He has no record of the Millennium Falcon. Duel suggested they might have gotten lost in the Black Hole Cluster.
Not Han, Lando said, and not in the Falcon. He knows how to fly that thing almost as well as I do.
If Han is missing, why didn't you send out a formal search party? Luke asked. Think about it, Luke. If I mobilized an official force, I could create a galactic incident just when we're trying to get Kessel into the New Republic.
Well, we'll go look for him ourselves, Lando said.
Luke could tell by the way Leia's face brightened that this was what she intended to ask all along.
Han, Kip, and Chewbacca raced across the open spaces of the Atmosphere Factory's landing pad to a cargo shuttle, an old Imperial model with scarred armor and long planar wings that made it look like a mechanical flying fish. Han and Chewbacca had flown a similar Lambda-class shuttle on their guerrilla mission to Endor, but this model looked even older. Chewbacca opened the hatch and Han ducked inside, moving straight to the controls. The Wookiee clambered after him as four guards marched into view around the perimeter of the atmosphere stack. The guards marched on what was probably a routine patrol. Han hoped they were sleepwalking by now. He punched the start controls. With a merciful whine and hum, the engines ignited. Power surged through the shuttle. The guards fired blasters at the shuttle. Han heard the sizzling thumps as the beam struck, but the ship's armor could withstand attack from minor hand weapons.
Time to leave this party.
Chewbacca raised them off the ground, maneuvering the shuttle away from the other vehicles on the landing pad. Then Han took over the controls. Below, the guards ran around the perimeter to keep within firing range, but Han flew the shuttle beyond the reach of small weapons fire.
Well, so much for sneaking out of here. Now Morath Duel's gonna know we escaped.
As if on cue, the shuttle's radio crackled and they could hear Duel's croaking voice in the background.
Solo! Han Solo, can you hear me?
Why, it sounds like my old friend Morath Duel. How are you doing, buddy? I hope you feel better than your assistant Skinksnacks.
Solo, you have caused me more grief than any other life form in the galaxy, including Jabba the Hutt. I should have squashed you when I had you in my office.
Han rolled his eyes. Well, you missed your chance, and I don't plan on giving you another one. You tell him, Chewie.
Han switched off the radio. Kip scrambled forward and grabbed the controls, activating the maneuvering rockets and making the shuttle lurch forward with enough force to slam Han and Chewbacca against their seats. Kip tumbled backward, unable to keep his balance in the acceleration.
What'd you do that for?
Han turned and glared at Kip. Chewbacca dragged Han back to the console. Just below them, the atmosphere shimmered and crinkled as an impenetrable ionized screen appeared, blanketing the planet.
They've got their energy shield operational.
The workers on Kessel's moon base had repaired the protective screen that blocked off the prison planet. If Kip hadn't punched their acceleration exactly when he did, they would have been sizzled in the bath of power, or trapped beneath the shield, unable to escape. Han looked over his shoulder at Kip.
How did you know?
Kip picked himself up off the floor, shaking his head to clear his thoughts.
Never mind. You okay?
Yeah, just get us away from Kessel. Kip turned to the side viewport and said, Here they come. The garrison on Kessel's moon spewed fighters, dozens of rejuvenated battlecraft, armored freighters, slim and heavily armed X-wings and TIE fighters. They roared through the wispy tail of atmosphere in Kessel's orbital wake.
Strap yourselves in. This is gonna be a hell of a ride.
Han reached for the controls, preparing to fight, then felt a boulder drop in his stomach.
What? His ship's unarmed.
He frantically scanned the console.
Nothing. Not a single laser. Not even a slingshot.
Kip held the back of Han's pilot chair.
We stole a supply ship, not a fighter. What did you expect? Chewie, pump everything into our shields, and I mean everything, including life support. Boost shields until they're off the scale. We're going to have to outrun them.
What did he say?
Now he said our shields are going to fail in about 2 minutes.
Kip bit his lip, then pointed out the front viewport.
Go there.
The Maw.
Are you crazy?
Swirling clouds of gas looped into the bottomless pits of black holes, making space look like a tangled skein of incandescent yarn. Gravity waited to tear apart any ship that came too close.
The enormous gravity wells of the Maw made a maze of all the hyperspace and normal space paths through the cluster. Most of the routes were either dead ends or went right down the gullet of a black hole.
We'll never find the right course. It'd be suicide.
Kip gripped Han's shoulder. I can show you the way.
How, kid?
Kip wore an embarrassed expression for a moment, then he spoke quickly. Now, this is going to sound like a hokey old religion, but it works. An old woman who spent part of her sentence in the spice tunnels told me I had some sort of tremendous potential. She showed me how to use something called the power or the strength or something.
The force.
Han wanted to grab Kip and hug him.
Why didn't you say so?
The first of Kestrel's ships reached them and fired, looping overhead, then returning as if to ram them. The shape of the attacking freighter made Han's blood turn to water, and he stared in silent dismay for a full second before he managed to cry out,
That's the Millennium Falcon! That's my ship! That does it. Now I'm mad. Chewie, at my order, drop shields and dump everything into thrust. Pump every last erg into our engines and take us straight into the Maw.
As Gantoris entered Coruscant's projection room with Leia, he stared at the giant windows that filled the walls with broad vistas of Coruscant. The two of them were not really high enough for such a view, Leia knew. The projection room was actually a deep internal chamber, and the windows were high-resolution screens displaying images from cameras mounted at the top of the Imperial Palace. She stepped to the control dais in the middle of the room and called up images she had compiled from the archives, records left over from Old Republic surveys and the dossiers compiled during the Alliance occupation. The window screens flickered and the images changed, startling Gantoris. He whirled as the landscape suddenly showed a completely different planet. His eyes grew wide and panicked, as if Leia had just transported him across the galaxy. "I'm showing you a new home. This is Dantooine, the place we have chosen for the people of Ilshaw." Around them, the window screens displayed vast plains of grassland and spiky trees. Purplish hills rolled across the distant horizon. A herd of small, hairy beasts roamed across the savanna. In the air, a cluster of bright balloon-like things, either plants or rudimentary animals, drifted about. A few had snagged on pointed branches of the spiky trees. Two moons, one lavender and one greenish, soared overhead. Leia had used Dantooine as a decoy when Grand Moff Tarkin interrogated her aboard the Death Star. To save her beloved planet of Alderaan, she had divulged the location of the old rebel base on Dantooine, rather than naming the real base on Yavin 4. But Tarkin destroyed Alderaan anyway, because Dantooine was too remote for an effective demonstration of the Death Star's power. Now, though, Dantooine could be put to use again, as a home for the refugees of Ilshaw. "Do you think your people would like to live on a place like this?" Gantoris nodded.
"This looks like a paradise. If these are representative pictures, this place Dantooine will be a perfect new home for my people."
The stolen shuttle plummeted into the maw. Maelstroms of hot gas buffeted them from side to side as Kip fought to maintain their tenuous course. The maw was one of the wonders of the galaxy. The very existence of a black hole cluster seemed astrophysically impossible and had led to much conjecture about its origin. Old Republic scientists cited probability arguments that among the near infinite stars in the universe, something like the maw had to occur at least once. Others speculated that the maw had actually been built, assembled by a powerful ancient race that had created the black holes in a barely stable configuration, to open gateways into new dimensions. At the moment, Han Solo cared only that the maw was likely to be the cause of his death. The shuttle's interior was dark and hot and stuffy. The wild colors and blazing light made psychedelic fireworks outside the ship and weird shadows inside. All lighting, life support, and temperature regulation had been shut down to increase power to the failing shields. Han sweated in the rear passenger seat, watching the controls he had relinquished to Kip. Though he had been fighting for his life almost constantly during the past week, he missed Leia very much. Han hated to know that his children had finally returned from their sanctuary planet, and he hadn't been there to greet them. And he would never see any of them again if Kip Duron's mysterious abilities failed to steer them through the maw. Kip struggled with the controls, flying the shuttle with some of the most delicate, most difficult maneuvers Han had ever seen, and Kip kept his eyes closed. The young man seemed to be seeing through a different set of eyes, looking at some path not apparent with normal vision. Staring at the deadly black holes all around the shuttle, Han wanted to close his own eyes, too. Sparks flew on one of the far control panels as a shield gave out. Chewbacca jammed long fingers down on the controls, rerouting and spreading the remaining protection evenly around them. If a single gap appeared in the shields, the X-rays and fiery gases would tear them apart. Kip didn't flinch. "Coming up on the end of this ride, there's a gravitationally safe island in the middle of the cluster, like the eye of a storm." Han felt relief rush through him. "We'd better hide there for a while, recharge the power sources, and make a few quick and dirty repairs." The swirling ionized gases parted like a curtain thrown aside to reveal the gravitational oasis in the cluster's core, a safe haven for them to recuperate before returning to Coruscant. "Made it," Han said in a whisper. But someone else had already found the hiding place. Orbiting a small rocky island in the center of the maw hung four gigantic Imperial Star Destroyers, bristling with weaponry. Within a moment of their arrival, swarms of TIE fighters poured out of the Star Destroyer hangar bays in a truly impressive show of force. The comm crackled. Gruff words spilled out of the speakers.
Imperial Shuttle, welcome. It's been a long time since we've received word from the outside. Please provide your security access code. Our TIE squadron is coming to escort you.
Han stiffened, remembering that they had indeed stolen an old Imperial shuttle, but a security access code. He had to think fast. He toggled the transmitter switch.
This is Imperial Shuttle Endor coming in. We've had a rough ride through the maw, and...
Improper response.
What a surprise.
You have obviously not been sent by Grand Moff Tarkin. Shuttle Endor, you are to be taken prisoner immediately and brought aboard Imperial Star Destroyer Gorgon for deep interrogation. Any resistance will result in your being destroyed.
Han wondered if he should bother to acknowledge, then decided against it. He was puzzled by the mention of Grand Moff Tarkin, the brutal governor who had built the first Death Star. Tarkin had been destroyed along with his doomsday weapon 10 years before. Could these people have been out of touch for that long? The shuttle lurched as if a giant invisible hand had grabbed it. Han could hear the metal plates groaning as pressure constricted the outer hull. "It's a tractor beam," Han said. The Star Destroyer Gorgon opened its huge receiving bay to swallow the prisoners. The tractor beam lifted the shuttle into the Gorgon's bay and hauled it over to an isolated landing area. Armed stormtroopers hustled into position. Chewbacca, the most intimidating, took the central position, while Han and Kip Duran flanked him. They walked out and surrendered. Doors at the rear of the landing bay slid open, and a tall woman strode through, accompanied by a bodyguard on each side. She wore an olive-gray jumpsuit and black gloves. She marched forward, paying little attention to those around her. She fastened her gaze on the prisoners. Her most striking feature was her waist-length hair, which was the color of hot copper and seemed to crackle with an electric life of its own. Her features were as finely carved and as rigid as a statue's. Her lips barely moved as she spoke. "I'm Admiral Dalla, in charge of the fleet guarding Maw installation." She flashed her green-eyed glance at each of them in turn. "You three are in a lot of trouble." Lando Calrissian piloted the Lady Luck toward Kessel. "Welcome to the garden spot of the galaxy," he said to Luke. Luke thought of his home planet of Tatooine, the Dune Sea, the great pit of Carcoon, the Yundland wastes. "I've seen worse," he said. R2 agreed. Lando opened a comm channel.
"Hello, Kessel. Anybody listening? I'm looking for someone named Morrith Duel."
"Who is this? Identify yourself."
"Our name's Timo. My associate and I recently hit it big at the Umgulian Blob races, and we have some money to dispose of. 500,000 credits, to be exact. So run along and fetch Duel."
Before leaving Coruscant, they had doctored up false personal backgrounds for themselves, removing any mention of the New Republic, but keeping enough hints at shady dealings and fast transactions to provide corroborating evidence. Another voice broke out of the speakers.
"Mr. Timo, this is Morris Duel. 500,000 credits is certainly worth talking about. I'll send a flyer escort for you."
Morrith Duel met them in one of the corridors of the Imperial Correction Facility.
"Welcome, Mr. Timo. Let me apologize for our turmoil here. Yesterday I lost my right-hand man and my primary shift boss in a tunnel mishap. Please excuse me if I seem a bit flustered."
"Quite all right," Lando gestured to Luke. "My associate is here to help me check out the details of spice mining and to advise me on its potential as an investment. I know I must have taken you by surprise. Tell me, is there any part of your operation I might invest in?"
Duell motioned for them to follow. When they were seated inside his office, he rubbed his hands.
It just so happens that just before his demise, our shift boss uncovered an exceptionally rich deposit of Glitterstim spice. It'll take a good amount of money and effort to make repairs in the collapsed tunnel, but the payoff can be greater than your wildest dreams.
I'd like to see all aspects of your spice mining and production. Let us observe firsthand how the business works.
Obviously reluctant to show them around, but afraid to do anything that could result in the loss of a great deal of money, Duell stood up, beaming.
All right. I understand your concerns, Mr. Timo. Come, I'll show you the spice processing line, and then we'll arrange a tour of the newly opened tunnels.
In the wide grotto, where part of the mine's ceiling had fallen in, wan light spilled down, illuminating the open areas. Workers had strung lights around the perimeter as they hammered and hauled broken rock.
What's that thing?
From his seat in a mine car, Lando pointed to the other side of the grotto. Buried under a pile of jagged rubble, dozens of glassy, spear-like legs protruded at all angles. Falling chunks of rock had crushed it, and the creature's whip-like legs lay askew as if it had tried to flail the boulders aside. Duell strutted over to the carcass.
That, my friend, seems to be the thing that creates the spice itself. It's the first such creature we've encountered, but there must be others deep in the tunnels. We're getting a xenobiologist to study it. The bulk of its body seems to be made of Glitterstim itself, and the strands we pull from the tunnel walls are what it uses as a web.
A guard joined them. He nudged one of the sharp crystalline legs with his boot.
We want to see if we can extract raw Glitterstim from the web sack and spinnerets in the dead body.
Duell bobbed his head up and down.
Wouldn't that be something? Absolutely pure Glitterstim.
Lando nodded noncommittally. Luke, playing his part, fished around for more information.
So, how does this affect your safety record? Did this creature prey on any of the miners?
Yes, it killed several, including the shift boss and my assistant. How many bodies have you found so far?
Duell asked the guard.
Three fresh ones and two old ones, and we think it killed a bunch more. There's a big Wookiee and some other prisoners still unaccounted for.
Duell scowled at the guard, but quickly regained his false smile. Luke felt cold upon hearing the news. The Admiral's quarters on an Imperial-class Star Destroyer were spacious and functional, and they had been Dala's only home for more than a decade. Year after year, she operated in a vacuum, alone as always, following Tarkin's parting instructions with no further input from the Grand Moff. Her fleet had been isolated, and the crew on her four Star Destroyers had fallen into a routine, but Dala did not relax her grip. She was afraid to wonder about events outside in the galaxy, confident at least that she could count on the Empire with its unbending rules, sometimes cruel, but always clear-cut. Everything had been cut and dried before the interrogation of the new prisoners. Dala punched up the recording and watched it again, though she had already replayed the sequence a dozen times. The man, Han Solo, sat strapped in a convoluted chair with steel tubes and wires and piping tangled around him. The gadgetry looked sharp and ominous. Most of it served no purpose other than to increase the prisoner's terror, and in that it proved effective. On the recording, Dala stood by Commander Kratos, the captain of her flagship, the Gorgon.
"Tell us where you come from," she was saying. "Is the Rebel Alliance crushed yet? What has happened in the Empire?"
"Go kiss a hut," Solo snapped.
Dala stared woodenly at him for a moment, then shrugged, nodding to Kratos. The commander punched a control pad, and one of the metal bars across the restraining chair hummed. The muscles in Solo's left thigh began to spasm, jittering. His leg bounced up and down. The seizures were not painful so much as they were maddening. Dala had found that a most effective interrogation technique was simply to induce an unrelenting facial tic that made the eyes blink over and over and over again for hours without end.
"Tell us about the Empire." "Empire's in the garbage masher."
Dalla could see the whites of his eyes as Solo tried to look down at his rebellious leg muscles.
The Emperor's dead. He died in the explosion of the second Death Star.
Dalla and Kratos both snapped their heads up.
Second Death Star? Tell me about it. No!
Kratos adjusted another button. The bars in the labyrinthine chair hummed, and Solo's right hand began twitching, his fingers scrabbling against the smooth metal, jittering and shaking.
The second Death Star? It was still under construction when we set off a chain reaction in its core. Darth Vader and the Emperor were on board.
Solo resisted, but he seemed to delight in telling the news.
And what happened to the first Death Star?
Solo grinned.
The rebels blew it up, too. And what about Grand Moff Tarkin? He's in a billion atoms, scattered across the Yavin system. He burned with his Death Star.
Gradually, the prisoner spilled the entire story of the other battles, the Civil War, Grand Admiral Thrawn, the resurrected Emperor, the truce at Bakura, the terrible conflicts in which the waning Empire had been defeated again and again. Until, finally, she had Kratos release him. Later, after the interrogator droid had run tests, she found out that Solo was indeed telling the truth. Alone in her quarters, Admiral Dalla switched off the recording. Her head pounded with annoying ache. One of the Maw installation scientists, learning that the new prisoner had actually been on board the completed Death Star, had demanded to be allowed on the Gorgon to speak with him. Right now, Dalla had greater worries. She had to decide what to do with this new information. Dalla took an Imperial shuttle and set off to see her chief scientist, Tol Sivron. Below her hung the Maw installation, a cluster of planetoids crammed at the exact center of the gravitational island. Immense bridges and bands held the asteroids in place. Access tubes and transit rails connected the cluster of drifting rocks. Under Grand Moff Tarkin's direction, Imperial constructors had ferried the rocks across space and through the obstacle course into the Maw. The insides of the asteroids were hollowed out into habitation chambers, laboratory areas, prototype assembly bays, and meeting halls. Dalla had read a draft of the communique Tarkin had sent to the Emperor, urging the creation of superweapons.
If we present the citizen with an absolutely invincible weapon, that shall become the symbol for the Empire. We may need only a handful of these weapons to subjugate thousands of worlds, each containing millions upon millions of beings. Such a weapon must have force great enough to dispatch an entire system, and the fear it shall inspire will be great enough for you to rule the galaxy unchallenged.
After getting permission for his scheme, Tarkin had used his new authority as Grand Moff to put together this super-secret think tank installation, where he could isolate the most brilliant scientists and theoreticians, giving them orders to develop new weapons for the Emperor. The installation was so secret that the Emperor himself did not know of its existence, and after the place was built, the workers and architects were eliminated. The secret of Maw installation had been protected. After Tol Sivron and his teams proved the initial concept of the Death Star, Grand Moff Tarkin had taken one of the installation's top scientists to the Outer Rim to oversee actual construction of the first production model Death Star. Tarkin's last words to the Maw scientists had been a challenge.
Good. Now create an even more powerful weapon. The Death Star is terrible. Think of something worse. That is your reason for existence.
Tarkin gave them 9 years to develop his next-generation ultimate weapon. And now, since Tarkin was dead, and no one else knew Maw installation even existed, Dalla could make her own decisions, plan her own course of action. Reaching the small gravity field of the central administrative asteroid, Dalla secured her shuttle in the docking bay. After marshaling a retinue of stormtroopers, she strode purposefully through the anterooms and into the scientist administrator's office.
Tol Sivron was a Twi'lek, pasty-faced and hairless, with two whip-like head tails that dangled from his skull.
The tentacles fell over his shoulders like two skinless blood eels sucking the back of his cranium.
Twi'leks were generally a disreputable lot, slinking around with smugglers and acting as henchmen for crime lords like Jabba the Hutt.
Though Dalla rarely questioned Grand Moff Tarkin's decisions, she didn't understand how Tal Siverin had obtained his position here. She told him what she had learned from the rebel prisoner Solo. "We may need to pump them for further information before we decide what to do next."
Siverin blinked his piggish eyes. "What to do? What do you mean? What is there to do?"
She crossed her arms over her chest.
"We can take the new Star Crusher and destroy the New Republic system by system."
The Twi'lek squirmed. "But the Star Crusher isn't finished yet. We still have tests to run, reports to file."
"You have been procrastinating for 2 years. You are behind schedule, thanks to your ineptness. Grand Moff Tarkin is not coming back, and you no longer have an excuse to delay. I need the weapon now, and I'm going to take it."
When Han came to, he was chained to a column, and he remembered little except that he had undergone a painful interrogation. He found himself in a spacious room, some kind of laboratory or analysis center. He heard singing and the sound of flutes. He turned his head to see a willowy alien woman standing in front of a device that seemed to be a combination musical keyboard and data entry pad. She hummed a complex string of notes as her fingers played on the musical keys. In front of her, a rotating blueprint of a three-dimensional triangular shape took form. He meant to say, "Who are you?" but his lips and vocal cords would not cooperate. Instead, he said,
"Well, yeah."
Startled, the female alien fluttered her slender hands around the 3D geometrical image. Then she pranced over to where Han lay. She was an attractive humanoid, tall and slender, with a bluish tint to her skin. Her gossamer hair seemed like strands of pearlescent feathers. Her eyes were wide and deep blue, carrying an expression of perpetual astonishment.
"I've been waiting for you to wake up. I have so many questions to ask you. Is it true that you actually set foot on the first Death Star? And you got a look at the second one while it was under construction? Tell me what it was like. Anything you can remember. Every detail would be like a treasure trove to me."
He worked his mouth, trying to form words again.
"Who are you?"
The alien woman touched her badge with one of her long-fingered hands.
"My name is Quizux, and I know that you are Han Solo. I've read the hard copy of the debriefing you gave Admiral Dalla."
Debriefing? Did she mean the torture chair?
Quizook's entire demeanor seemed superficial and distracted, as if she were paying only a small amount of attention to details, while she was preoccupied with something else.
"Now then, please tell me about the Death Star. What did it sound like? What did it feel like when you walked down the corridors? Tell me everything you can remember."
She wrung her hands in barely restrained excitement.
"No."
His response apparently shocked Kui enough that she took a step backward and let out a startled musical squawk.
You have to. Information is for everyone. We build on the knowledge we have, add to it, and leave a greater legacy for our successors.
Kui struck him as impossibly naive. Han wondered how long she had been sheltered in the middle of the black hole cluster.
"All right, then. Tell me where my friends are. I came in here with a young man and a Wookiee. Share that information with me, and I'll see what I can remember about the Death Star."
Kui glanced toward the door as if contemplating whether to summon the stormtroopers after all.
"It is in my charter here as a researcher that I have access to all the data I need. Why won't you answer my few simple questions?"
"Why won't you answer mine? I never signed your charter. I'm under no obligation to you."
Han waited, fixing his eyes on her as she fidgeted. Finally, Kui pulled out her datapad and hummed as she keyed in a request. She looked at him, her deep blue eyes blinking rapidly.
"Your Wookiee companion has been assigned to a labor detail in the engine maintenance sector. Someone named Kip Duron is still in the detention area, high security. Now, tell me about the Death Star."
Han rolled his eyes, but saw no reason not to.
The Death Star had been destroyed long ago, and the plans were safely locked inside the protected data core of the former Imperial Information Center.
Han told Kui about the corridors, the noises. He knew the most about the hangar bay, the detention area, and the garbage masher, but she didn't seem interested in those details. Why are you so interested in all this, anyway?
She blinked her eyes. Because I designed the Death Star.
Kip Duran felt like an animal trapped in a cage. He stared at the dull, confining walls of the detention cell. He remembered the shrunken and leprous face of the old woman, Vima Dabada, who had spoken to him of the Force. She had a habit of huddling in corners, of pulling shadows around herself as if to hide from immense prying eyes. The fallen Jedi had a guilty conscience that suffocated her like a blanket, but she had taken the time to teach Kip a few things before the Imperials whisked her away.
"You have great potential,"
she had told him in one of her last brief lessons. Kip had paid little attention to that until now. He stared fixedly at his untouched meal. Perhaps if he concentrated, focused his abilities on manipulating something, moving a tiny object, he could turn that skill into an escape. But now that he needed to make use of the Force, he didn't know where to begin. He was not certain how he did what he did. His parents had no special sort of powers. On the Dire colony of the Anowit system, they had both been outspoken local politicians. Kip remembered that night of terror when the stormtroopers had marched into the living quarters, kicked over the furniture. The stormtrooper captain read an arrest order, accusing Kip's parents of treason. Then the stormtroopers drew their blasters and stunned the two astonished adults. Kip's older brother Zeth had tried to protect him, so the troopers stunned him as well. Kip had been only 8 years old at the time. Kip and his parents were taken to Kessel, while 14-year-old Zeth was hauled off as a brainwashed recruit to the Imperial Military Academy in Kurita. They never heard from him again. Kip's parents had died during the prison revolt on Kessel. Kip had rotted in the darkness of the tunnels for 8 years. Now he had escaped, only to be captured by the Imperials again. Somehow the Imperials were always there to wreck his aspirations. Kip's anger focused on his meal tray. He pushed on it, trying to bend it. Had the tray moved, jerked a little? Perhaps anger was the key to focusing his latent energies. He concentrated on the walls, on his narrow surroundings. He had to find some way of escaping. Han had already proved that it could be done. Kip vowed that if he did manage to get away, he would find someone to teach him how to use these mysterious powers. He never wanted to be left so helpless again. Looking at the delicate bird like Kui Zux, Han could not imagine her as the developer of the Death Star. What's a nice girl like you doing in a place like this?
This is what I do. This is what I'm best at.
Kui nodded her head absently as if considering her answer.
Here, I have a chance to grapple with the greatest mysteries of the cosmos, to solve problems that others have claimed are unsolvable, to see my wild ideas take shape. It's very thrilling. One of our concepts was for autonomous world devastators that could strip raw materials from a planet's surface, feed them into huge automated onboard factories, and produce useful machines. We're quite proud of that concept. We transmitted the proposal off to Tarkin shortly after he left. I wonder what ever happened to that idea.
Han blinked in astonishment. The terrifying fleet of world devastators had attacked Admiral Akbar's home planet, laying waste part of the beautiful water world before they were destroyed. The world devastators have already been built, put to very efficient use.
Kui's face lit up. Oh, that's wonderful.
No, it isn't.
He shouted into her face. She sprang back.
Don't you know what your inventions are used for? Do you have any idea?
Kui straightened up again defensively.
Yes, of course. The Death Star was to be used to break up dead planets to allow direct mining of the heavy metals trapped in the core. The world devastators would be autonomous factories, combing asteroids or sterile worlds to produce a wide range of items without polluting inhabited planets.
Han snorted and rolled his eyes.
If you believe that, you'll believe anything. The Death Star's first target was the planet Alderaan, my wife's home world. It murdered millions of innocent people.
The world devastators were turned loose on the inhabited world of Calamari. Hundreds of thousands died.
I don't believe you.
I was there. I flew through the rubble of Alderaan. I saw the devastation on Calamari. Didn't you read about it in my interrogation report?
No, that wasn't in your debriefing summary, which you so melodramatically call an interrogation.
Yeah, well, and you didn't get the whole report.
Nonsense. I'm entitled to all data. Besides, I only develop the concepts. I make them work. If someone on the outside abuses my inventions, I can't be held responsible.
Qui flitted back to her 3D display panel, tapping on the musical keys and humming to sharpen the long, angular image she had been constructing.
Would you like to see what I'm working on now?
Sure,
Han said, afraid that when she no longer needed to talk to him, Qui would send him back to his detention cell. She gestured to the image of a small craft. Four-sided and elongated, it looked like the long shard of a fire facet gem. From the diagram, he could see a pilot's compartment with space enough for six people. Small lasers studded strategic areas. The bottom of the long point carried a strange toroidal transmitting dish.
Right now, we're working on enhancing the armor. Though the craft is not much larger than a single-man fighter, we need it to be completely impervious to attack.
And what is it? What does it do?
Qui looked at the image with awe, pride, and fear.
Well, we haven't actually tested it yet, but the first full-scale model is basically completed. We call this concept the Sun Crusher. Tiny, but immensely powerful. One small, impervious craft launches a modulated resonance projectile into a star, which triggers a chain reaction in the core, igniting a supernova even in low-mass stars. Straightforward and simple.
In his horror, Han could think of nothing to say. The Death Star destroyed planets, but the Sun Crusher could destroy whole solar systems.